Podcast friends, my name is David Lee, and you are listening to the Inspire Design Create podcast, giving freelance filmmakers a voice, sharing their stories, and connecting the world of cinematography, commercial filmmaking, and starting your own business together. Let's go. Mic check. Hello, how's it going? What is going on, friends? We are back. Brand new week, brand new podcast episode. We're going straight into it. No fluff, no dilly-dallying about it. We're talking about The Creator. The film has been out for about a week and a half now, depending on when you're listening to this. Well, based upon the time that I'm recording this. And the, The hoopla about The Creator was, shot on the FX3. Indie filmmaking using a small mirrorless camera, right? Sony FX3. And I've been getting messages. People have been sending me things on Instagram like, oh, dude, look, like the FX3 was used on The Creator and all this good stuff, right? And I think that's very cool that Gareth Edwards decided to go that route and more so like the DPs, you know. Greg Fraser was one of them. And then I forget the other gentleman, Oren, I don't want to butcher his last name, tag team DP, right? And also Gareth Edwards, who, again, you know, he directed Rogue One, which was honestly one of my favorite films of all time. Now, you know, fast forward 2023, we have The Creator, and again, shot on the FX3. And here's the thing, right? I don't want people, because a lot of people, I've been seeing videos on YouTube and other social media outlets saying that, you know, if you have an FX3, you can also be a filmmaker, right? And all this really nonsense bullshit, right? The camera to this day and age still does not make you a filmmaker, right? Being able to tell a great story makes you a great filmmaker, hands down, right? So again, this isn't a knock to Gareth Edwards. He has the ability to create great stories. We've seen Rogue One. Just to let you know, I have not seen The Creator, because when I saw the trailer a few months ago, I literally saw the entire film in like a 2-minute trailer. They did a good job at, I don't know if they didn't do a good job at creating a mystique around the trailer. They did a good job at just showing you what the hell the entire movie was going to be for, you know, in a 2-minute time span. So that's why I didn't watch it. Now let's focus on the topic at hand, right? The FX3. Why, why didn't they go with Venice 2, Rialto, Mini LF, V Raptor, Alexa 65, right? And any other camera you can think of. If you look at the behind the scenes, if you watch the interviews, if you read the articles, right? This is my take, and I'm pretty sure I'm 99% correct on this. Gareth Edwards, the director, right? So you can think of your Quentin Tarantino's, your Chris Nolan's, Chloe Zhao or whoever, right? The director of the film is operating like 90%+ of the film. Okay. Now, if you're a director, you typically aren't operating the camera like ever. That's not really your job, and you don't have the time. It wouldn't be a good use of your time to operate the camera as well, right? Like that would be seeing like a Denis Villeneuve or Sam Mendes saying, "Hey, Roger, can I operate the camera?" You know, Roger would be like, "Why?" You should be directing, you know? Okay, so anyways, right? So that's point number A, right? As Gareth Edwards, the director, is operating the camera, okay? Now, if you're someone who doesn't typically operate a camera, then physically you aren't the best person to be operating the camera, right? And especially in this day and age where camera builds can be quite heavy, right? Even in Alexa Mini LF, fully built out with like gold mount batteries or the Bebop unit and, you know, heavy lens. They did shoot on rehoused Kawas, a heavy lens. You have onboard monitor, all this stuff, right? Venice 2, Rialto, all the different flavors of cameras we have, right? There's typically like, if you're doing gimbal stuff, which they did like a lot of gimbal stuff, like 90%+ of the film was like, you know, gimbal, right? It's like the camera's always moving and you're on a Ronin 2 on a ready rig. If you're a director and you don't operate the camera a lot, physically, there's no fucking way you're going to be running around with the Mini LF fully kitted out, or Venice 2 Rialto fully kitted out on Ronin 2 for like, you know, 8 months or 6 months at a time, every single day. You're not doing that, right? So what are your options then if you want to operate the camera? The only really option you have at that point is a small ass camera and a small gimbal, right? That's strong enough. The motors are strong enough to do the moves that you need and to hold the weight of the camera body, any accessories like remote follow focus. And obviously they, I believe they used, again, rehoused Kawas. I'm not sure who rehoused them, but rehoused Kawas and also prototype Atlas Mercury lenses, right? And the Mercury lenses, again, aren't that heavy. I've used them. I haven't used them on set, but I was at Cine Gear this year and I was able to, you know, play with like the demo units they had, right? They're very lightweight ones, especially like the 42 millimeter, the 72 or 75 is a little bit heavier, but it's like the equivalent of a Sigma 50 mil full frame prime. It's not that heavy, right? So you have that on your FX3. With the a mount adapter, PL to E mount, and follow focus, rails, all that kind of stuff, right? And you have it on a RS2 Pro. I think that's what they use. I don't know if they use the RS3 Pro, or if the Pro was out at the time of them shooting it, right? RS2 Pro, and you know, you can an average person who's around cameras can work with that, you know, for like a full day, 6 hours, 8 hours, you're taking breaks here and there, right? Things like that. And that is the reason, literally the reason why they used, one of the reasons, I'm sorry, let me backtrack. That's one of the main reasons why Gareth Edwards, Oren, and Greg decided, hey, let's go with the FX3, right? Color science, they can also, again, the color science has pretty much been there. You have, you know, S-Log3, very established gamut color space, similar to Venice 2, FX9, right, FS7s, and all the good stuff, F5, F55, all the classics, right? So they know the workflow already when it comes to at least the color space of S-Log3, right? Dynamic range of the FX3 is still pretty solid. I feel like all of them, like A7S3, FX3, A7IV, A7R, 4, 5, like they all have, they're very similar to like the FX9, not as close as like the Venice, I will say. Even Venice 1 still has more dynamic range than my FX9. FX9 does have a solid like 13 and a half stops in my experience. You get more latitude in the highlights. You can hold highlights really well on the FX9. And same thing with like A7. A7IV, it's sort of close, but FX9 definitely has more. So I would put A7IV, A7S3, FX3 in that same like, you know, like solid 13 stops. And going on to the next point, right, is they also shot on Anamos recorders, like Ninja Vs and probably some other ones. And the reason why is because the HDMI port on the FX3 does support ProRes RAW, right? So ProRes RAW, 16-bit, it's compressed RAW, which is still pretty good because if you look at, like, say, the Komodo is 16-bit compressed RAW, right? They have, like, the HQ, the MQ, and the LQ. I think they added another one, like an ELQ or something like that. But anyway, 16-bit compressed RAW. So more than enough for a VFX pipeline, for a VFX workflow, traditional VFX, and also using the volume wall that they used. So they shot two ProRes RAW. I couldn't find anything in my research as in regard to if they actually edited the movie in Final Cut Pro, because that's still the only NLE that will support ProRes RAW. So if I had to guess, especially with them having like an $80 million budget, which is pretty good for feature film, I say that's quite average these days. 50 to 80 is like 50 to 100 is pretty average, you know, for like larger named directors and production companies, right? And DPs attached to them. They have like $50 million at least. So $80 million, my guess was they had enough time and storage capacity to transcode that 16-bit RAW into something else, whether that's like, whether they went old school and just did like uncompressed Cinema DNG, or they just did like, you know, ProRes Quad 4 XQ. That would be my guess. I don't think they edited the movie in Final Cut Pro. My assumption would be that they transcoded it into like a beefy codec, like Quad 4 XQ or even like Cinema DNG, like RAW. So that's point number two, is they had the flexibility and the robustness of a strong codec to be able to use it in post for all the CGI stuff and all the VFX stuff. Third point is, you know, the dual base ISO of 12,800. That is a strong point of the Alpha cameras and the Sony cameras, right? Is having that dual base ISO, whether it's 12,800 or 4,000 or 3,200, it can support you in those situations where if you do have the post-production budget, and workflow to support you in the back end, then you can shoot at, you know, 12,800 in like pitch black. Is it going to be noisy? Probably, right? But you're at least getting you're at least getting everything that you need in camera that you need to see in the visual eye in the camera, if that makes any sense. So, you know, if you're 12,800 pitch black in the middle of like, say you're on a beach, okay, it's pre-dawn, it's a blue hour. You can't see shit. You can't see anything. If you've been in blue hour, like pre-dawn, you can't see a damn thing. It is pitch black. So let's say that only light source they have is moonlight, which really isn't a lot. 12,800 is at least going to get you, is at least going to get the camera to a point where you can see things. You can see like maybe the waves in the ocean. You can see the rocks. You can see the sand. You can see the talent, right? And hopefully like the wardrobe is helping to bring them out in some way, shape or form, right? Even if it's silhouette, at least you can see bodies. So that's where that dual base ISO is coming in handy. A lot of DPs I've seen in the last year have been utilizing the Venice 2 and the Venice because of the dual base ISO. They can go out in a sort of like run and gun docu situation where they're using just ambient light, and the ambient light is enough for the sensor to pick up something in that second base ISO. So then when you take it into post, you can do your noise reduction, then you can add in your sharpening, add in your grain, and still have a strong enough codec like XOCN, ProRes RAW, Cinema DNG, any of like the Flavor RAW codecs where the colors are still going to hold up because you're really pushing the limits of the codec. And those RAW codecs, again, like XOCN in the Sony line or ProRes RAW in this case, is going to be robust enough for you to be really push like the limits of lifting the blacks back up, of digging things out of the darkness, right? In that like 5-10 IRE range, right? Now, that being said, if you go out and buy an FX3, is that going to, are you going to be the next, you know, the next cool thing on the block? Are you going to be the next big director on the block? I don't know. Maybe you are, right? Again, the camera doesn't make a great storyteller. You being able to write and tell a great story makes you a great storyteller. But a camera like the FX3 is not going to make you like the next filmmaker, right? I don't know him personally, but I've seen some of the work from, I think his name's Danny Grevitz on, he used to make like YouTube content. I think he still does make YouTube content, but he used to be a full-time cinematographer. And now he just does his own thing, right? Which is great. And he shoots primarily on the FX3. And I've used the FX3 before. I've had other people who have used the FX3. I've seen footage from the FX3. I've seen films shot on the FX3, like short films and spec things. And like any other camera, that FX3 could be a Pocket 6K. That could be a Panasonic S1H. It could be an FS7. It could be an A7 S3 or whatever fucking camera you want to put in there, right? Like, get it out of your heads that it's not the FX3 that is like some hidden secret that Sony created. The reason why Sony came out with the FX3, right, is they just needed a smaller body camera to be able to support a wider range of filmmakers and to be able to, say you're in those situations, and we all are, right, where you just need a tiny camera, either on a gimbal or on like a boom jib, or something overhead that isn't, you know, that's fairly lightweight. Or you need to put it like in a refrigerator or in a cabinet and getting those kind of weird angle shots, you know? And that's why the FX3, in my opinion, the reason why it came out, right? So that being said, FX3, would you get one to make your next film? I don't know. I don't think I would, just because I know how I build my cameras, and I need the proper rigging equipment. I need the proper power. I need the ability to build out the camera small or big, right? Smallish and big to be able to fit my needs. Whereas the FX3 is those smaller cameras I don't use too much anymore, because by the time I end up building it out, it's the size of like an FX9, right? So it's like, well, then why don't I just use my FX9 instead? But again, everybody has their own workflows. Everyone has their own likes and dislikes. And so you need to find the camera that is best for your filmmaking style and your needs, right? All the technical stuff, those are all checkbox. Like, you need your dynamic range, you need your raw codecs or whatever it is, right? And then also, like, how do you like to operate the camera? And how do you like to build out your camera? So, all right, that does it for this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and I hope it brought you, I hope it enlightened you more about the FX3 and why all the hoopla and all the praise on social media, just because one person who had $80 million decided to use a camera. Don't buy into the hype. If you like this episode, please rate it on iTunes podcast. I would appreciate it. Please follow the podcast, share it with all your friends, your homies, your homies. You know the drill. And I will catch you guys in the next podcast episode.